Menards' 11% rebate is here. From lighting to lumber, from doors to floors, the bigger the project, the bigger the rebate. From painting projects to that new kitchen makeover and designing that outdoor space of your dreams, save big on any project you're tackling. Hurry into Menards for an 11% rebate on everything. Mail-in rebate is a merchandise credit check, not a point-of-sale discount. Redeemable on future in-store purchases only. Not on future purchases on Menards.com. See store for details.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello, all, and welcome to the Fantasy and Sci-Fi Fanatics Podcast. I am your host, Dino Kuba. Today, I have me a very special guest, J.M. Chaley. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah, not a problem. People are like asking me, like, they're like, you've had a lot of urban fantasy stuff, people. I'm like, guys, I am zoning in on my novella release. So I was like, it's only fair, right, that I get to talk to people, you know, in similar genres and subgenres. So, but I really appreciate you coming on today, you know, and chatting with us about, you know, your writing experiences, you know, your, you know, anything you have to tell us about tips and tricks, those kind of things. But especially love talking to people about, you know, their books and their stories. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks.
Excellent. Excellent. So we'll start with that first question. What has your writing journey been like up until this point?
Yeah, it's funny. People, I meet so many other writers where they have an origin story of like, I was 10 years old. And it always bases like, because they've read their whole life. My situation was, I didn't really become, I mean, I've read books, but it was always sort of like, that's stuff that they make you do in high school. You know,
and I really
didn't fall into reading until, you know, an adult, you know, maybe 10 years ago or so, very recently, and maybe a little bit longer, 12, 13 years ago, but really not that long, honestly. And then once I started reading, I was like, man, I feel like I want to write something. And that's usually the connection that people get when they're younger, when they start reading. It's just that it happened to me when I was older, only because I only started reading at a later age. So it's like the connection hit, but later in life. So that was the catalyst.
Well, that's awesome. I totally get that. It's funny. Like people always like when I ask that question, that was actually given to me season one by an author. He was like, oh, I want you to ask me this question. Like we're in the chat, right? Like we're talking. And he asked me, I was like, okay, I'm going to ask. And then I asked him, I tweaked it a little bit from the original one he gave me. But he was like, yeah, I hadn't thought about it till that moment. He goes, that might be like a cool one to keep. So I've been using it ever since. And it's funny, like you said, right? Like I get some people who are like, I started writing when I was 10. And then I get other people like, I get my friend Christopher G. Brenning, who he's like, eh, you really read too much. And all of a sudden I was like, I'm just going to write this grimdark fantasy, like this massive tome for each one, you know? So it's funny because I get so many different people and which I think is good, right? Because it really shows that you don't have to be the same thing, right? You don't have to be, you know, this or that. Being a history teacher is a little different for me. I was classically trained as a historian at Michigan State, a little different than when I came here to New York. Not everybody is trained that way. It's, you know, it's really funny, right? But it's more like being an author, I think, for me, because it's like we're all different and come from different backgrounds and have different experiences and use those, you know, to our strengths. So
yeah, absolutely.
It's cool.
Definitely.
Now, when you're saying reading and writing, I'm curious. Now, do you read the same? Were you like reading urban fantasy? Like, I want to write this? Or were you reading like a whole bunch of different genres? Like, I'm just kind of curious how you kind of zoned in.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think urban fantasy is my favorite genre. That's where I sort of my home base. Most of the books I read are in urban fantasy, but I read fantasy, like high fantasy as well. Not a lot, but some. My first manuscript I ever wrote was actually high fantasy. It was all like demons and magic and that sort of thing. Before I got into writing urban fantasy. But I read lots of genres because I want to sometimes dovetail in other elements of different things into my stories. You know, maybe it's horror and I want to get those suspenseful thriller beats down really well. Just insert. It's still urban fantasy, but I want to make it a little spooky or a romantic arc. I've read some romance books, you know, and I want to polish my game when it comes to writing romance. You know, none of my books are romantically are none of my books are in the romantic genre, but I do have romantic arcs in my urban fantasy stories.
Well, it's so funny because I had a dark, well, now, like, this was even before age of my podcast here, but like, my first season was like before, like, whatever, like, romanticism was a thing, right? And it was so funny. So I had a couple of romance authors that were technically doing romanticism even back then, but then I had one author. She was Heather Smith. She was amazing. We did like a 2-part episode. We just kept talking and talking, and it was so interesting. She did like dark urban fantasy, and yeah, it was very interesting. And it had like your typical werewolves and stuff, but like it had a lot of romance in there. And afterwards, like I had a couple of male authors get a hold of me, like. Once the I released the episode, and they were like, "I didn't know, why are you fantasy and sci-fi? Like, why are you doing, romance and stuff?" I'm like, "Have you ever watched Star Wars?" They're like, "Yeah." I'm like, "What does Han say when Leia says I love you?" And they're like, one guy goes, "I know," and he goes, "Crap, it's romance." I was like, "You betcha, it is in a sci-fi." And I was like, really, like, there's so many times, right? I just kept going with examples, and they were all like, "Crap." I'm like, "Yeah." Lord of the Rings. Yeah, Lord of the Rings, right? Like Eowyn and Aragorn, right? Like, it's pretty freaking cool. Like, yeah, so I definitely agree with it. I think it's fun, right? To Richard Lee Byers, Forgotten Realms fame. I got to interview him my first season. He was one of my heroes, one of my reasons I started to write, period, back in the day. And it was cool because I got to tell him. And he thought that was so cool. But it was so interesting because he does a lot with the Forgotten Realms and with his Marvel stuff recently, with like Himmler and stuff, is like, or Heimdall, he'll do literally like a lot of horror in there with, like, now with the science fiction, with the Marvel, with the superhero stuff. But yeah, he blended a lot of different stuff very early, I feel like, in my reading career. So for me, like, that made total sense, right? Growing up. So anytime I read somebody indie that was blending, like Clayton Snyder, I've had him on here a few times. He's awesome. He blends a lot of different genres.
I
So
love
I totally
blending
get what
stuff
you're
together.
saying. It's fun, right? Because you're taking the best of two worlds and making something new out of it. So I don't know. I always think that's super cool. Now, so we talked about reading, but now what genre or genres do you currently write in, and why?
I'm writing in urban fantasy, and you know, I may have a romantic arc in it, but it's not qualified as a romance. It's still urban fantasy. That's pretty much everything I'm writing right now. All my irons on the fire are all pointed towards urban fantasy.
Now, I have to ask this question because I found this for myself at least. So I have my current stuff, like in our timeline, essentially, right? In this century, this decade, right? And the upcoming one. So it's interesting for me because I have urban fantasy, your typical, it's a, but then I have some prequel stuff in the world that I cannot wait to do that really takes place. Like, I'm gonna actually write how my Monster Hunter Society actually came about and everything. So those are my prequels. Well, that's like at least like, oh man, like 7,000 years ago, right? If not like maybe 10, I'm like picking. So, but like for me, I know for, and I have like a Roman, like I always wondered where like the Lost Legion went. And then somebody came out with a paper 2 years ago saying that maybe they just went to Spain and got like the paperwork got lost. I thought that was the dumbest thing I've ever heard. So I actually put them with zombies in ancient, like Britannia. And and then I have them like the Lost Legion. I have a few people surviving and doing whatever for like really cool things. And they're gonna be like doing some cool things in my world too. But for me, it's like historical urban fantasy. So it's not like typical. So I'm finding personally when I'm talking to other urban fantasy authors, some of like urban fantasy doesn't really encompass now really what everybody's doing, if that makes sense. So I think you're gonna start to see, romanticy a little bit, and those kind of things like cozy fantasy form an urban fantasy. So I'm just curious, like, do you find that with your own stories? Like, do you feel like you completely fit if you say urban fantasy? Okay.
It's such a broad category. Like right now I'm writing something that's, I guess you could call it like urban romanticy,
See,
because
that's what I'm curious.
it's got a lot more romantic elements in it than my Lisa Cooper series with my, the stuff I have out right now. So I'm leaning a little heavier into it, which is fun because, like I said, I've read a couple of romance books, and now I'm kind of like charged up, like, oh, I want to write some of this. this kind of stuff without kind of going all the way over, but certainly wading in deeper than I had before. So it's been really fun.
That's cool. I'm just curious because we always talk about all these other genres and the subgenres, but every time my friend mentioned this, he goes, you never talk about the, like, what people could call their subgenre. He's like, I know you, Dan, but like, he's like, I want to know what other people are doing. So I think that's really interesting. So I'm wondering if we will see that personally in the next 10 years, right? If you'll see, because my friend Logan D. Irons, he also has his legacy of Wolves and stuff. His Bridget King's novella starts kind of it off, and like he's got these werewolves in ancient times, right? And it's so interesting, I think, to really think about that.
Yeah,
I'm like, well, that's historical urban fantasy, right? But
him
and I are the only two that really I know who have done that. Other people talk about it, but yeah. Awesome. Yeah. We're going to start our own subgenre. Yeah. I cannot wait. Yeah.
I have historical urban fantasy. I have, I guess, dark urban fantasy. Sometimes it delves into the spooky. Like I don't write horror, but because I write urban fantasy with vampires, I have a lot of like horror adjacent friends who are like, hey, come to this book show. We're doing a horror fest. And I'm like, but I don't write horror. And they're like, get over here.
Nobody will notice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Which is fine by me, you know.
Yeah. That's super cool. I'm just curious because, like, the more I start thinking about it, you're the first urban fantasy author that I've interviewed in a while, guys. This looks like production wise, right? Like everybody's back to back or like a week, like two episodes apart or whatever. But really it's been a while for me in pre-recorded chats. So I always like to ask just to kind of see where everybody else is at. So, but see guys, I'm not the only one with historical urban fantasy vibes. Right. So
I think
that's super cool.
It's fun.
Or other genres. That's super cool.
Cities have been around for thousands of years. You can always write urban fantasy.
Well, I said to somebody, I was like, a lot of these, because like I had some students that were doing research into certain stories, and we were discussing that. They're like, this just seems like urban fantasy, but in their time period, right? Yeah. Like, and I was like, oh, that's really. I was like, man, that's actually really true. So it was really funny. So I thought that was really interesting.
You could write an urban fantasy in Mesopotamia.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm reading this really cool book right now.
The Streets of Whatever.
Yeah. Well, it's like Valiant Comics did. I'm going to blank on the guy, but he's from Sumeria in ancient times, but there's a reason, right? Why it's like not the immortal man. It's like the eternal warrior. It was a great comic and it's a really cool book and it's really cool how they're doing it. But I love it because it's basically like a mix of historical urban fantasy and urban fantasy in present day. And you get both stories and they've been doing it really well. I hope they do like more episodes or episodic like serials for it or something. I found it on the shelf at a random bookstore and I was like, I love the comics. I was like, this is mine. And the cover's like super cool. So I was like, that's definitely mine. Yeah, it's super cool. Now, this is my favorite part of any interview is because we get to actually talk about your books and stories, which is my favorite thing to do. So what is your novella Vampires of 1863 about, and how'd you come up with this idea?
So the Vampires of 1863 is a prequel to my series, The Unlife of Lisa Cooper. I was writing the first book of the series, which takes place modern day. It's a straight up urban fantasy. Main character is a vampire, and she's kind of talking about some of the stuff that happened to her, you know, right when she was first created as a vampire, very young. And the more I started digging into her backstory, the more I thought, man, I would love to really expand on this and tell that story. And that's where that came from. It's a novella, so it's only, 180 pages, 40 something thousand words, but it's the prequel to my series. It takes place in 1863 when my vampire protagonist, she's only been a vampire for 3 years, and she stumbles upon a murder of another vampire. And she's just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and she gets thrust into this conflict in the city of Boston. It takes place in Boston, Massachusetts. It's basically this power struggle between vampire lords and fae folk nobles. And she's kind of caught in the middle of it just because she was just a lot of bad luck. She's not a very powerful vampire, so she's in way over her head with these ancient beings, that's kind of how she gets her start.
Oh, that's cool. That's super cool. And what a great year too. You got a lot of crap going on that you can write about there, like that's going on in the United States at that time. That's actually right where I'm starting up after my kids take their first round of state testing. It's like we're literally like 1863, 1865,
Oh,
the next.
wow.
So yeah, that's super cool. I didn't think that's like I keep this is why I interview people, first of all. I know everyone thinks it's glamorous and get 10,000 views per episode. It's not true, guys, but I hope you guys subscribe and maybe we'll get there. But it's like it's interesting for me because my wife's like, you just love having chats with people. And I'm like, I do because I never would have thought to do Boston 1863. You know, like I would do ancient Rome, right? And I'm always thinking like, what are people doing in the in between present day? And then, you know, those, because that's like what I like to teach is more like ancient times and stuff. And that's been more of what I studied. So in between, I know that stuff, but it's still hard for me to make that connection. So I love that you did that for the story. So I have to check that out. Because first of all, I'm addicted to novellas and it sounds really cool. So that's awesome.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm just curious how it's hard, right, for a prequel and novella. So I don't want you to give anything away. I always try to avoid spoilers, but is I'm trying to think of like a good way to put it without trying to spoil anything. Was there a particular reason for the series that you picked Faye, or like for this novella that she would also encounter besides like the vampires, or was that kind of just like something fun that you're like, oh, I'm gonna put this in this prequel?
They kind of wanted to, for two reasons. One, because it was urban fantasy, I wanted to include some other kind of thing, some other kind of critter besides vampires to show that my world had all sorts of stuff in it. And, werewolves are mentioned and other things like that, but I wanted to show something else on the page. And I thought, what's a good group of supernatural beings that I can kind of include that aren't going to necessarily overwhelm my protagonist and give and will give me a lot of great real folklore and breadth to kind of draw from creatively. And I thought Faye is a great fit. But the second reason is because in my setting, the origin of vampires, the very first vampire was Irish.
Oh, interesting. Oh, cool.
Yeah, so what happened was the when vampires were created, the very first one was it was a punishment. He was meant to be cursed. That's actually based on an old actual Irish folklore tale. I kind of went, that sounds good. I'll put it over here. This very first vampire, he decided to spread his curse and make more vampires. And the response was the Fae kind of trying to corral everyone and going, hold on, this is getting out of control. We gotta maybe put a lid on this and maybe kill some of you guys and control you. So you had these kind of fae lords kind of weighing down on the vampire population and trying to keep them in check. And the vampires kind of going, no, I want to get out and spread and have my own, right? So there, that's where the fae and vampire conflict came from, was the origins of vampires and the fae trying to keep it contained.
That's super cool. I'm just curious, just from like world building, since we're already kind of on it. Like, so for me, like I have a very particular reason where like I like all of our, and I think it's cool in history. Like R.R. Birdie and I talked about this too. Like, I have like a Heracles character, right, in my world from urban fantasy, and but it's like it's not your typical Roman Hercules or Greek Heracles, but like. There's all these strong men that go way back to really like Africa, right? Is like where the origin, right? And then India, right? And then we have our own, right? Like John Henry. So I'm taking a character like that, and but I'm really showing the real man, essentially, kind of like the, but like he is a, you know, immortal and stuff for a reason and stuff and super strong. But like you kind of get to see like R.R. Birdie gave me this idea, and I blame you, Ronnie. So like, want to show, right? Like how that tale changed over time and stuff. But I know, so I was like, I'm just gonna keep doing that for my world. So like my orcs aren't typical, right? My other things like Fae aren't typical, but I have a particular reason that I think is really cool that I'm not gonna spoil for anybody right now. You have to read my books to find out. But like I'm doing that world building for a reason. So I'm kind of curious, like, is there like when you're doing, your world building, like what's like your main focus? Like, did you just want to put cool things in there? Because you kind of went typical, like Dracula, Vlad the Impaler, like that kind of thing. Like, is there anything in particular or structure that
Yeah.
you're really like, this is the goal I have in mind?
Honestly, I think I had a story to tell, and I wanted to focus on my protagonist, her, Lisa Cooper. She's the vampire, and the theme of it is that she's trying to hold on to the remnants of the woman that she was in life without losing herself to the curse.
I like
So
that.
I did take a time to when I looked at it, and I said, do I want to do vampires differently? Do I want to do fae differently?
Yeah.
And there's this wealth of folklore of fae. And I'm like, why wouldn't I want to draw from this well of lore that I can just kind of take and move? And all my readers are going to be like, yeah, we understand what a goblin is. We understand what a
Yeah.
pixie is. And I don't need to get into that kind of stuff. And vampires are already cool.
Yeah, they're already kind of world builded, right? Like they're built for
Yeah,
you, right?
I
Like you
felt
can
like
do a
I
little
didn't.
bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I felt like I didn't need to, because once you start dabbling in that and saying, this is how I do vampires, you're always going to have, you're going to have these vampire books that are going to attract vampire readers. And if you go too far over here, like a Stephanie Meyer with Twilight or something like that, they're going to be like, what? What are your vampires do what now? They need to eat cotton candy instead of blood. That's ridiculous. I don't like that. So I'm like, nope. My vampires are Dracula based. They drink blood. They burn in the sun. They turn into a bat. Stakes in the heart are bad. All that kind of stuff. I just not going to reinvent the wheel. My goal is to tell Lisa's story, and anything that exists in folklore that's cool, I'll put it in if I like it.
Yeah. Well, I think you said something so interesting there, because I struggled at first in my world building. So I was like, oh, and this again, I have a particular reason that people are going to find really cool. But like, again, my ogres or orcs or whatever, right? Giants, like you name it, trolls, like they are a little different for a reason. But like, I found I was going way over here where it was too new, and I couldn't, at least use part of the trope, right? For a reason. So then I had
Right.
to really, I couldn't go exactly the same because I have a reason that I think is really cool. So I had to literally find that middle. Whew, man, was that difficult.
That's
Now I
tough.
got the hang of it, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, it's like, how do you make the trope good enough for fantasy? For some reason, I'm like, I'm just like, I'm good. Either have typical or like, but it's been hard for me to find that middle. I've talked to a lot of authors, gotten a lot of feedback, because I like to do something new. Like I have one world where it's like my elves are just elves, like a few of them, but I have another one where it's like I have elves that have chloroplasts in their skin, and that's why they are more attuned to nature. But like, I couldn't go too far over to too new, because then they're not elves, right? So
Right.
like, yeah, having to do that was just like, my friend was like, I think that was stupid, Dan. And but like, I finally got used to the skill of riding the road in the middle, where I could ride the trope but do something cool, because I've seen authors do that, right? But it took me a while to like, do the exercise or flex the muscle, to have that skill.
Yeah, I
And I
can
know from
imagine.
some people, yeah. So I just always find it interesting though, where people do that from, because I love the tropes for a reason, right? For urban fantasy, I have that right in there, right in my description at the start, is like, forget the business card, go into the typical, PI and stuff. I love them. My guy isn't exactly a PI though, so it's but I'm still paying homage to, Harry Dresden in particular. But
Yeah.
yeah, I always find it interesting to see how people will build for urban fantasy. Sorry guys, it's what I'm writing. I want to know. All right, so
Yeah.
I think that that's super interesting though. That's super cool too. I always I'm like playing with my face still. I'm kind of, I don't know. I have some in the court, but not like, I have like all the little people or big strong guys, but not like the court itself, and
Yeah.
the gods and goddesses or demigods and stuff. So I'm still like kind of working through on those ones.
Vampires are this kind of weird, like when you look at like fantasy creatures, vampires are like this, they're in this category unto themselves. And what I mean by
They
that
really
is,
are. Yeah.
yeah, like if I wrote a book and I had my protagonist was like an elf or some kind of fae, then I could be like elves. And there aren't like this camp of like elf people that read
Yeah.
elf books that would be like, gimme, bang. Or, oh, it's a fae, gimme, bang. But there are vampire people.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know that there's any kind of other supernatural maybe werewolf, right?
Yeah.
Or
Like, not to
zombie,
the degree of vampires, I don't think. But yeah, they'd be like underneath. Yep.
those folks tend to live over in the horror place or
Yeah,
romance.
yeah.
Like
Yep.
werewolf, it's a vampire too. Vampires live like usually horror or romance, werewolf. But it's weird because like when I go to book shows and stuff, certain people I don't even need to pitch. I'll just be like vampires and they'll be like, give it, you know.
Yeah.
And but then some people I'm like vampires and they're like, no, I don't like vampires at all. So
Oh, interesting.
it's kind of like this yes or no. So in hindsight, I was very glad that I didn't tamper with the recipe for vampires because I'm already attracting the people that would want my book. So it's kind of a weird thing. Like if I wrote any other fantasy question, sorry, any other fantasy creature, I might be tempted to like
Oh, yeah.
throw in my own ingredients and make it
Yeah.
my own, like if I was doing something else with, but not vampires. They have a
Awesome.
baked-in demographic that already wants your
Yeah,
book.
yeah. Yeah. I always worry about that with werewolves. I did something particularly interesting that I found interesting. And so I'm like, ooh, I'm like, people are gonna, some of those people, the werewolf people are really gonna like her, or they're gonna hate me. I already know. So, but it's like, that's not like, they're not necessarily like the main focus, you know, but like they're like in there. So I don't think I'll make that many people that upset. But yeah, the vampire, we have talked about that on here before. You're not the first author we've discussed that with, which is so funny with the vampire people. Like, yeah, I've had two other authors say the same thing. So it's so funny. So I guess as an audience, we need to learn, if you're an author or writer out there, be really careful with your vampire story
And
and
what's
vampires.
funny, I didn't even know this going into it. Like I had no clue. And then I found this to be true at book shows when I'm selling my books. And I was thinking, oh, thank God I didn't do anything other than writing a normal vampire, you know?
Oh man, you're making me so glad I went like middle of the road, even though I have a unique reason for it. Like, I still went middle of the road. Like, I'm not gonna give it away, but like the bat thing, right? Like, I don't have a tiny bat, but you can see where my thing's all, like, you can see where people came up with the idea from, right? Like, I do this thing, and you're like, oh, that makes total sense. Like, it's a hop, right? It's not like a leap off of a building or anything. But yeah, it's always interesting, I think, to see what audiences like and don't like. So I think that that's personally great advice for us, to be careful with vampires. But yeah, Twilight. Oh man, like I was not. I maybe I'm one of those vampire snobs. I was not into that. I love the werewolves in the movies and the books, but yeah, the vampires, yeah, not so much. But yeah, that's very good advice. So speaking of vampires, so what are your books, The Unlife of Lisa Cooper, stories about, and what can readers expect from the current books?
Yeah, that's my main series.
Such a cool cover, by the way. I love that.
Oh yeah, Lisa's about 160 years old. Well, actually, she's about 180 because she was 22 when she got turned. And she's done a really good job of staving off the curse and holding on to her humanity and the person that she used to be. And what that means is that she's still a vampire. She still has to go out at night. She burns in the sun. She has vampire powers, all this kind of stuff. But she hasn't let the curse consume her. And I mean that in a in like just her mind and her body. So when the curse kind of takes you, it gives you more strength, more speed. You become more powerful if you submit to its beckoning, right? So Lisa is not as strong or as powerful as other vampires that are as old as her. There are younger vampires that are stronger and faster than she is because they've submitted themselves or, you know, relinquished themselves to their curse. But because of this, Lisa has slightly pink skin, a little bit of the color of life still with her. Her skin is a little bit warm. It's still cool to the touch, but it's not icy or dead. And when a vampire really loses themselves, sure, they get faster and stronger, but the other thing that happens is their skin begins to pale. They become icy cold. When they drift too far down the dark spiral, their skin will become pallid and death-like to the point where they become like walking cadavers. Ancient old vampires that have truly lost themselves down the dark spiral will actually begin to rot and just decompose because they just become more dead. So staving off the curse, you kind of remain more lifelike. Submitting to the curse, there's power here, but you become more dead. And Lisa's like, I'm good. But what happens with the series is that she keeps finding herself in danger and trouble, not just for her, but the people that she loves. And she has to find a way to protect the people that she loves against these other, you know, they could be werewolves, depending on what book it is. There's two books in the series so far, without succumbing to her own curse. So she needs power and strength, speed, and all this kind of stuff. But she doesn't want to lose herself down this curse. There's this well of power that she can drink from, but it has consequences. But she has to protect the people she loves. So those are kind of the adventures of Lisa Cooper, as she struggles to, you know, live her unlife in Boston.
Wow, that's super cool. So again, it's hard, right? Not to ask spoilers, but how have you, since you mentioned werewolves, you know, and these other, you know, people or like tropes and things like that that you may have to fight or deal with, how do you pick those, like between book one and two? Like I found personally, like I had started originally for my Monster Hunter in book like six. Didn't know that at the time, but that I was like, this is just not working, and I couldn't explain things. I was like, this is way deeper in the story in the series. So then I had to go back, and then I had to really think about it, you know. So I'm still kind of doing that for some of the main, like villains or whatever. Like, but I have some other people. I'm like, what do I put here, you know, for the first actual book? So I'm kind of curious at why you chose to put in the people to be her adversaries, or you know. In the world between book one and book two, like how did you pick exactly?
I try to find challenges for her that fit her in whatever moment she was on her own kind of hero's journey. And I use her hero's journey lightly because by no means is she like has this big call to action to save the world or anything like that. That's not what this story is. But in her own little microcosm of the people that she cares about, she does heroic things, you know. She protects the people she loves. But when you know when the series starts off, you know, her problems are kind of small. And then when the series as it progresses, they build up, the stakes get higher, the enemies get stronger, that sort of thing. So I basically said, okay, if I have this kind of roadmap of her adventure and her story, I want to have, you know, small problems here, bigger problems here, big, powerful bad guys over here. And what does that look like? What can these things be? And I just sort of plucked, you know, supernatural stuff from the Rolodex of urban fantasy, right? Demon, werewolf, rival vampires in the first book. And then the second book has other things that I'm not going to really go into, but
Oh, yeah, that's perfect.
more stronger stuff there. She goes to Ireland in the second book and runs into all sorts of stuff. And I'm writing the third book now where she's going to be going to New York City and there's going to be lots of rival vampires there. So I guess to answer your question, it's all about the stakes. It's just turning up that knob a little bit each time. Each scene, each book, if the knob gets turned up a little bit.
I think that makes total sense. I like that answer too, because yeah, I think sometimes I'm like think more I'm trying to think like how what why I was like sh at the now I'm not stuck, right? I think I was more like a timeline situation, but I was like, yeah, I was trying to find creatures and characters and mythological figures or legends or whatever, and I just couldn't quite find anything that fit. And like I said, for me, I found like, oh, I'm like was in the wrong spot essentially, right? Maybe that was it. Maybe I was like almost like my main character was too powerful, and then he was like I had to find even more powerful people, and for me it didn't make sense, right? Like so I think yeah, I think that's really good advice is you know, thinking of maybe I shouldn't have found the creature first or whatever, right? I thought they were cool, so maybe that was my problem. Maybe I should have went story first and you know focused around my character. So I think what you say actually is really good advice and
Well,
makes
with
total
Lisa,
sense.
I start off by chopping her off at the knees. I start the story by saying She has not drank from her well of power. She has not embraced the speed, the super strength and the super speed. She's held on to her humanity. And as a result of that, she's sacrificed power to hold on to the remnants of the woman she was in life. So right out of the gate, she's weak. She's not as strong as her adversaries. And these could be her rival vampires and other whatever supernatural monsters are out there. She's already at a deficit at the beginning of the story.
Yeah.
And I was very careful about, like, you know, leveling her up, because I didn't want her to get to a position where, like, I wanted to show progress, but I also wanted her to, like, oh, geez, I don't want to get her to a position where she's just, what, punching dragons or something. Not that I have dragons, but, you know. Like,
oh, yeah. Well, it's like in the, like, when you begin the Dresden Files, right, you know for a fact that he has a death curse on him, right? Or you know, it's like, yeah, right? Like, I think Jim did a great job being like, he could be all powerful if he goes evil or whatever, but he can't because Morgan and these people are going to kill him, literally, right? Yeah. And then Patricia Briggs, I love Mercy Thompson, right?
Yeah.
I love, right? But it's like, she's that little coyote, right? But then she'll just do a few things, small actions, right, that do have big consequences or results, right? But I love that. So I love what you're saying, like, capping that. I have this, my character, I'm struggling with that right now. So I think that's why, like, I went with the prequels, showing, like, how he became a monster hunter. And I figure through that, once I finish fully, like, the third one I'm almost done with, then, you know, I figure I could maybe, then once I've capped the magic system, essentially, or whatever, right, and I have a little bit more of those weaknesses, right, because I don't want it to be like Superman, right, like that kind of thing is the problem, right? So, yeah, I think that it's really good what you did to set up those expectations, right, because you set them here, right, and that's also what Will White did in Cradle, right, like the main character, you know that they're here, they're weak, it's for this reason, right, and then the rise is even, it's more cool, right? Yeah. Like it's a great arc. So
when you get to the point where when you get to the point where Lise is actually kicking ass and taking names, then you're like, because she spends the, you know, she's very humble and very aware of her limitations here. And then when I finally bring her up and she's like, okay, you know, then hopefully the reader's like, oh yeah, finally.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, Patricia Briggs has been such a huge influence on me. I read a lot of her books before I started delving into writing, and she was one of the, her and Kevin Hearn, who is the
Kevin
Iron Druid.
I met him. He was so flippin' cool. He was a nice guy. He gave me. I was teaching English at the time. He gave me him and his wife. Gave me like gave me, what do you call that? A credit, like almost $150 credit to the local used bookstore. Because this was in Scottsdale, Arizona. I was teaching in Phoenix, and he was like, oh, here, you teach.
Wow.
I'm like, so I bought so many used books at the Bookman's there for my kids. Like, he's just, and all the time, right? Like, I, over the years, you know, I message him and say, hey, I need help with this research, or what would you do here? And he's always, he doesn't like, oh, I'm busy or whatever. He's doesn't wait. He responds right away. And just such a nice guy. Yeah. He's, and talk about an amazing writer.
Yeah. I met him.
Amazing.
I met him once, and,
where'd you meet him at?
He came up to Massachusetts.
Oh, I missed that. Yeah, I was trying. Was that the weekday one, or was it like, it's always hard sometimes when how he does
it. I think it was a weekday. He came up to Copper Dog Books in Beverly, Massachusetts, which was right next to which was right next to
Salem. I was going
to
take work off, and then they moved something out of my schedule, and I couldn't. I was so mad. I was just going to take that. I was going to drive the night before. Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
He was so great. But yeah, he's in, you know, he lives in Canada now, so it's hard for me to go where he is. But huge influence, sweet guy, nicest guy in the world. He's just so genuine and a big, big influence on my writing for sure. Him and Patricia Briggs for sure.
Oh, that's cool. Nobody ever says Kevin. Like, I talk about him all the time. Like, not that people don't like it, but like in terms of like inspiration for her, like, as soon as I read, because I moved to Phoenix and then I started to read like book one. And then like I read them all when I lived down there. So my wife and I, we ate at Rula Bula.
I was going to say, have you eaten the Rula Bula?
In the same night we passed to get back to my wife's, we passed high school where something really big happens, right? We even went to, on accident, went to two of the places in Flagstaff later on in the series. And yeah, and it was just so cool to like be there and yeah, and like be reading the books and stuff. I'm like, oh, we have to go to this location. My wife was like, oh my God, we're dating at the time. She was like, okay, fine. Like she was a really good sport about it. But yeah, I went and met him at the Poison Pen in Scottsdale the same night as Brandon Sanderson, Patrick Rothfuss, Pierce Brown. Literally,
Oh
Pierce
my
Brown's
God, wow.
like, yeah, like first like couple weeks of being an author, right? Michael J. Sullivan. Pierce Brown told me, we're talking about. I was like, oh, what's this about? You know, and I had bought it previously, like used or whatever, and like gently used because it was just came out. He's like, yeah, I might sell a few, and now I just like I laugh every time I think of that. Like, yeah, he sold a few. Yeah, Brian McCollum was there. That was his first like tour and stuff. So many
Wow.
people, but and no offense to anybody, but Kevin was just like, yeah, I went back and talked to everybody, a bunch of indie authors too, like three or four times. I mean, this place was packed too. I was literally there 8 a.m. in the morning to literally like almost like 9:30 p.m. at night, and you kept having to leave and come back. So I went back, yeah, probably my fourth time. He signed all of them that I had at that time. But yeah, everybody was super cool and nice, but he was like probably the coolest, like, celebrity or person I've met, and I've met quite a few people. Like, and he was just, yeah, he was just awesome. So I always think about that. Like, if I ever become big or whatever, like I would act like him and Mark Lawrence. Like, those guys are
Yeah,
just so cool and so humble.
that's goals for sure.
Yeah. It was super cool. Well, that's awesome. Well, I love that you mentioned both those people because that's me too. Like, I love their writing and I love what they do and talk about characters. My wife, if we were gonna have a second one, my first one, he's okay now, but yeah, didn't start off so well, with how he was born and stuff. So I think we're kind of done. Like we might adopt or something, but I wanted to name him Atticus so bad, and my wife was like the second one, but then after now she's like, I'm so sorry. Do you want to change his name? I'm like, no, it's fine. But yeah, I'm like, she was like, well, we'll get a dog. You can name him Atticus. I was like, okay, that's fair. Like, yeah, but I love those books. Yeah, super, super cool. I know we're winding down on time, but I definitely want to make sure, you know, we can at least still talk about, another product of yours. So what is your book, The Wicked Wound of, I'm sorry, this was the short story, right? The Wicked Wound of, sorry, I knew I missed one. So what is your short story, The Wicked Wound of Whitney Hill about, and what can fans of the genre hope to get out of this short story?
Yeah, this short story is only 7,000 words, so it's like a 40-page little short story. It takes place during the events of the first book of The Unlife of Lisa Cooper. So
Oh, I'm so glad I asked you. That's cool.
so you don't need to read it to get anything to understand or comprehend anything in my book, in my series, The Unlife of Lisa Cooper. But if you want to dig a little bit deeper, this little short story is about a coven of spellcasting women who appear in my series,
Oh, that's cool.
and they all have separate types of magic. So they're not witches. There's one witch among them, but there's a witch, there's a druid, there's a mudong, that's Korean magic. There's an Arawak, native woman. There's a Wampanoag woman who does like spiritual magic, like a shaman. Did I say there was a druid? Yeah. There's a fortune teller who does like tarot,
Oh, cool.
runes, roll the bones, that kind of stuff. And then the kind of leader is this woman Andrea, who is able to basically combine and pool all their magics, even though they're all very different, pool their magics into a giant well of power and create these amazing effects. So basically, you take one of these women, put her in the middle of the circle, they all join hands. And it creates this sort of convergence of magic where their magic spells, the magic that they're working in the center, become augmented by the entire coven. So the story is about this blight, this evil blight that they find in the woods in Whitney Hill, which is a real place in Watertown, Massachusetts.
Oh,
And
cool.
the short story is kind of about how they discover it and what they do about it. And then you kind of fast forward to The Unlife of Lisa Cooper, and there's this big battle in Whitney Hill Woods. And this is sort of like a little mini prequel to that one story arc within the book. So you don't need it to get the whole thing, but if you do buy it and you've read The Unlife of Lisa Cooper, then you kind of get the whole enchilada.
Oh, that's cool. That's
Yeah.
awesome. Now, if people were interested, would you recommend the order, right? If I'm correct here. So your novella, Vampires of 1863, and then the short story, and then book one, and then book two for The Unlife of Lisa Cooper, correct?
Tried to maybe. I mean, I tried to write it in a way that you could read them in any kind of order,
Oh,
but yeah, that
yeah.
would be a good order to do it because it's kind of chronological. You could actually read eight if you want to really go chronological, you read 1863, Vampires of 1863, then you read the first book of The Unlife of Lisa Cooper from like chapters
Got
1 to 22.
it.
Put that away, read the Wicked Hill of Wind. Wicked Wound of
Oh,
Whitney
cool.
Hill, and then go back to The Unlife of Lisa
Oh,
Cooper.
cool.
So if you really want to be particular about it, it kind of inserts
Yeah.
itself in the middle of the first
Oh,
book.
that's really cool.
And then
That's
you read the
awesome. Well,
second book.
yeah. I wish I had done that with some of Kevin Hearn's stuff, because then he was coming out with all those short stories and
He
novellas and
did
stuff.
all that stuff, and I
Yeah,
ended up
I had
reading
read
some
them all.
stuff out of order. And I'm like, wait, what happened? Yeah.
Yeah, I had to go back, and I had to go to the web his website, because then he was like, "Oh crap, sorry guys," and was putting the timeline on there. Yeah, like you should read this. Yeah, so I wish I had done that actually with his stuff as well. So that's I'm glad I asked that. That's really cool. Well, now you're making me feel like I need I so I have not finalized. I'm behind because of the new year and work already. So I've not finalized my 2026 reading order yet. So I'll probably have to do novella first, just to get that in, because I like chronological personally. Yeah, so maybe I'll just flip them real quick. I'm hoping to be ahead this year, but I'm already behind. I'm trying to finish Brandon Sanderson's Rhythm of War for book club. My poor best friend is just like, "Are you done yet?" Because we were supposed to be done last week and for the new year, and I'm a little behind. So I'm trying to. I
Those books
promise.
are huge too. They're like,
Oh my gosh. And it's like, yeah, it just feels like we're at that moment where we're about to, get to the climax, and we're like just kind of dragging. I can't wait to get to the climax, because then he just like kind of pops down, and the resolution's always great. But it's like that roller coaster, right? You're about to get there, but you're just like, are we there yet? Like, I want to get to the really, really fun part. Oh, that's awesome. But I'm glad I asked you that question though, because yeah, I am going to do that actually. Because I always love when people have, whether it's short story or novella or something. Yeah, I like to get that like chronological order. I always find I get a lot more out of it. And I just want to make sure we have time for our last question there. So, do you have any news, updates, current projects, anything like that you can share with us before we head out for today?
Yeah, I'm writing the third book in the Unlife of Lisa Cooper series. I'm not that far along. I got maybe 7,000 words, maybe four chapters. But it is coming along. She goes to New York, and the New York vampires are not friendly to the Boston vampires.
I like that.
And it's vampires divide their realms into territories, and you have these bleeds. Like there's the bleed of New England and the bleed of New York. That's how they call their territory. So they're on the brink of basically what they would call a bleed war, where the two territories would go at each other. So Lisa's getting embroiled in that. That's her next pain in the neck.
That's awesome. Just picture like the Jets and the Sharks, like, but like vampires. That's awesome. And
And
they
I
would
do
be
have.
from New York and Boston. Like, that's all I have to say. Like, that makes total sense to me.
And I do have a couple of things I'm writing that I'm gonna try to get traditionally published if I can. I'm gonna query on them and get, see if I can get an agent. That would be the dream, right? I'm always gonna self-publish my Lisa Cooper stories, but I do want to get a book deal eventually on something.
Oh, yeah, I think hybrid's the best way to go. Look at Brandon Sanderson, right? He gets a
Yeah.
tour and the traditional stuff, and then he writes his other stuff on the side and does those Kickstarters, and he just reverts it back and forth. That's how he has that private theater at his house. I want my own.
Yeah, exactly. So I do have those kind of going on, and who knows when they'll see the light of day or what the status is on those, but the Lisa stuff is going to keep coming.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, that's super cool. I just want to remind our audience that you can find all the links in the description, book and social. So make sure you guys check those out. We want to remind people, to when you are like me, right? And you read The Vampires of 1863 novella, make sure you are also reviewing it, right? Those are going to be some of the most helpful things you can do other than just buying and then reading the book, right? So especially now with, we've been talking about the algorithm shift and stuff. It's always really important to help all of our authors and creatives, but right now is especially that time where it ticks back up for the spring and people are kind of chugging along at that point. So those reviews are going to be critical. So we could just remind our audience, please make sure you're doing that. Don't forget, not just like the Kindle, physical books and things like that, but also Audible as well. I do 50-50 because I'm a dad and I'm insane right now. So with work and writing and stuff and podcasting. So I make sure I just copy and paste my Kindle or Goodreads right over. And actually Amazon goes right to Goodreads now, which is nice. But I make sure I copy and paste those over into Audible or whatever the audio format I'm listening to. So you guys can just remind, remember those things. Those are going to be our main themes continue for this season and into season six. So thank you, audience. Thank you so much, my friend. This has been great.
Yeah,
I cannot wait to
thanks.
read everything. So yeah, I'm gonna flip out book one from the novella. The first book though is definitely gonna be in my kind of like in the wings. So I have a few books that I have that like if I can finish things pretty quickly or if I get kind of bored with something else,
Yep.
sometimes I. So I have a few in the wing. I don't tell people about them, but that's going to be one of them for sure is book one. I'm really excited for both, for all of them really, but the series in general. I love urban fantasy. I love what you were saying and what you've been posting, on social media. I want to, remind people, make sure you check out, your, social media, stuff like that. Your Facebook's really good. You always got cool stuff on there. I've been taking some notes myself for things. I'm like, I got to do that too for posting stuff the next couple of months here. But if there's anything else I can do, like I said, I got the podcast group on Facebook. You can always go in there. I can give you the link again or whatever. You can go in there, post whenever you want, whenever you got news updates. You can, if you're too busy, just send it to me and I'll post it in there. It's super easy. I got a lot of systems in place. But yeah, if there's anything else we can do for at all, just let me know on Facebook or email me and we'll get it to the audience and help you out as best we can.
That's awesome. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, not a problem. Well, you have a good rest of the day, my friend. I'm sure I'll talk to you soon on social media and I'll send you an email between now and next week. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.